honest, yes, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
All right, lads, so this is just completely freaky stuff, and I'm not a superstitious person at all. But holy shit, the four provincial winners that won this year are the same as the four provincial winners in 1920. Now, you have to put this into context. Tipperary weren't given much of a chance. We gave them a bit of a chance. Cavan were given no chance. Tipperary would never have beaten Kerry. Cork beat Kerry. Cork were given no chance against Kerry. What is going on, lads? I don't know if there's some sort of higher power directing these things. As my father's analysis often says, sometimes your name is just written on it. I don't know, Keane. I'm thinking of going back to Mass.
Yeah, I suppose it's one that I saw a good tweet. I think it was from Kieran Lillis. He says, what were the lotto numbers in 1920? it's a bit like that. It was extremely heartwarming to see the events of Sunday in terms of the performances and the passion of both winning teams particularly, and I suppose to the victor go the spoils, I guess. But when you think of Cavan and Tipperary waiting so long, and you know, counties with hugely proud traditions in Gaelic football, really, if you go back a long, long way, it was incredible stuff yesterday. The emotional scenes in the post-match interviews were, you know, it would put a smile on your face, and even seeing the celebrations from the players at the final whistle was just, you know, it was just pure joy, you know, and raw emotion, and that's really the beauty of sport. And I suppose we, you know, when you compare that, not to get into huge comparison, but when you compare it to, I suppose, the session that was Saturday evening sport, which in the Meath Dublin game, which was truly depressing. You know, it really lifted the spirits, I think, for most observers to see the scenes, you know, after the Cavan and Tipperary victories. Incredible stuff.
Yeah, but Meath really had no chance on Saturday night. They didn't have any chance anyways. But I didn't even know about this, the four winners in 1920. The force was with Dublin. Meath had never a chance anyways. The force was with Cavan. The force was with Tipperary. And the force was with Mayo this year. And that is it. Cavan were dead and buried against Monaghan at halftime. Like, Monaghan should have scored four or five goals in that first half. The force was with Cavan. How did we not see this sooner? Like, I mean, you have Ulster champions who are in Division 3 next year. You have Munster champions who are in Division 3 this year. And I see some people making an argument now, Conan, for, oh, the provincials are not dead. Like, I mean, Dublin dominate Leinster, Kerry dominate Munster, Donegal were going for three in a row. They were dead. I don't think it's a very good year to make that argument. You know, you're looking at winter football, you're looking at no supporters, you're looking at very unusual circumstances. And obviously, whatever is going on 100 years later, that's undescribable.
Yeah, like, like, the provincials aren't dead, but I think like the biggest argument is do they fit into an All-Ireland series, which they probably don't. But like, when you see stuff like that, it is amazing. And I did think of you and your father throughout the weekend every time this happened, that I can't believe that you haven't blown your own trumpet, because you were the one person on Thursday who said, well, you backed Tipperary to draw. You were giving them a very good chance, and I don't think other people were sort of looking at them too much. So I'll blow it for you if you want. But like, it's incredible, and I'm going to have those screams of the Cavan players in my ears for a long time. They seemed so surprised, and they were just, everybody was overjoyed and the shock. And like, this went on for about 5 or 6 minutes, just joyous screams as if they were like teenagers. It was brilliant.
Yeah, they were grabbing each other's faces like they couldn't even believe it. Like, you had Mickey Graham had to cut off his BBC interview because he was crying. He couldn't hold it together. Like, I mean, you look at it, like, he talked about the people at home, what it means to them. It's a very difficult year. They're waiting since 1997. We know they're fanatical county. And like, I mean, I suppose, like Tipperary, we'll start with Cavan and we'll do Tipperary in part two. The outpouring of emotion from the Cavan players was definitely noticeable, Keane. And I think it's like, you know, a lot of underage success in provincial terms, four in a row, and then didn't translate to senior and been knocked and have had hard times. Like, just seeing the players, it was very, very noticeable how they just, you know, the raw emotion and the way they were hugging each other. Like it was incredible to see.
It really was. And I suppose, yeah, you touched on it there. These guys have, or certainly a large number of them have, experienced success and have been on you know, winning teams, and you know, Thomas Galligan was on a McCrory Cup winning team in Cavan and stuff like that. So like, these guys are, you know, have experienced success. They know how to win. And then I suppose it's they've had an awful lot of disruption with their own senior setup then, in terms of just availability of players from year to year, you know, and they do have a fairly significant talent pool, and that's been proven by their performance level in the championship. You know, let's not forget they were up, you know, in Division One, and that, you know, they've been competing, and they've just had a, I suppose, back-to-back relegations was quite surprising to everybody, and things looked pretty okay for them at the start of the league. I think they won their first games, and they were looking in reasonable position, and they, just for whatever reason, they lost their way a bit. But then you look at their talent form, and you know, that was a huge victory after extra time against Monaghan, coming from behind. You know, had a tricky game against Antrim, where Antrim set up quite defensively. They managed to pass that hurdle, and then they're down at half time so badly against down after playing some fantastic football, and you think there's no way back for them, and they just find it within themselves, like, the spirit of that group is incredible.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they delivered their best performance in the final against Donegal, and they were absolutely worthy winners, you know, of the final, deserving winners in the game. And, you know, fair play to them, because, you know, they have taken, and, you know, I suppose they did mention it in their interviews after the game, that, you know, everybody's writing them off, and they were written off, you know, pretty much in most of their games. Like, so, you know, people probably half expected Down to beat them. Certainly Monaghan were expected to beat them. And there's no doubt about it. I mean, Donegal were unbackable favourites yesterday. So,
yeah.
I mean, it takes a lot of sort of, I suppose, courage and will to deal with all the setbacks over the years and just continue on and do it. But I suppose they have had the carrot of the talent at their disposal. So I suppose it's not, let's face it, it's not like they, you know, they've come from absolutely nowhere. There is a pool of talent there. They have been playing at the top table in terms of league football sporadically. So I suppose maybe upon reflection, you look back and you say, well, maybe it wasn't that big of a surprise that they were capable of competing in the Ulster Championship. But I think it's just the manner in which they play the game, I think, is also something that captured people's imagination and affection. They've had their games all been kind of televised as well in this short window. People have got to know their players and the styles of players, and got to kind of fall in love with the, you know, the sort of characteristics of how they play the game in terms of long deliveries and kicking their kickouts down, and just that sort of that heart and competitive spirit, and I suppose going for things as well, not, you know, playing this sort of boring hand passing recycle game, which they did at the start, and now they've seen the rewards of being more expansive and being braver, and I suppose that's something that should be admired.
Yeah, I suppose we'll get to some of that now in a few minutes when we get in to analyse the game, because there's a huge contrast in how Cavan and Donegal go about breaking down the defensive system in comparison to Cork, who are just absolutely clueless, which we'll talk about in the second half. But yeah, you mentioned, like, Cavan were relegated. They're playing against Monaghan the week later. Like, they should have been beaten at halftime, 4 or 5 goals. They played, you know, offensively against a strong wind, and then they played defensively with a strong wind and somehow came back in that game. Then they were completely flat against Antrim in a terribly boring game. They were dead and buried against Down and came back out of nowhere. And, like, I mean, just to sum up what a bonkers team Cavan have been this year, they're almost impossible to analyse, probably easier to analyse yesterday than the other games. Conor Madden, Conan, who scored the goal, he scored 1-2, he scored a goal to put it to bed. He came on, was brought off. That was a blood sub. He came on again, was brought off. That was a blood sub. He came on again, went off for a black card, and came on again and scored the winning goal. He came onto the field 4 times in the match.
Can you imagine the face on the other subs there? It's like every time, 3 times in a row in the first half, Mickey turns around and says, "Connor, warm up, you're coming on." And it's like, well, I guess it's going to be Conor Madden coming on first in the second half. Like, but it was, and he came on and he scored an amazing point straight away, his first introduction. And like, but in a way, he summed up Cavan as well. Like, the Mickey Graham has sort of adapted and evolved throughout this championship. I think you mentioned them being dead and buried against Monaghan and Down. They were behind for 48 minutes against Donegal as well. They were completely calm in today's game, and with or without Madden this time, because it seemed like they were relying on Madden against Down to come on and then they would start playing more offensively. This time they were hitting ball into Martin Riley and saying, "You go and battle for it," like they were hitting into Thomas Galligan, battle for it. And then when Madden came on, then, like, yeah, he was offering just a bit more again. But it was clearly obvious that he was always going to be called upon at some stage, but he was probably delighted the amount of game time he ended up getting.
Yeah, he got nicely. It beats coming on for 2 or 3 minutes as a blood sub and running up and down the sideline in front of the stand, although there was no one in the stand, so it's probably not as embarrassing. But like, I mean, I don't know, Keane, sometimes the underdogs have to beat the 15 in front of them and the referee, because referees generally lean towards the favourites. It's like, what's happening here? You know, they think the safer bet is to go with the favourites. The two black cards I thought were very, very harsh. Killian Brady's was an accidental trip. Ryan McHugh got him the black card by slapping the ground, you know, petulantly. In Ryan's defence, he wouldn't have known whether it was, you know, accidental or whether it was on purpose. And, you know, he was fairly pissed off. There wasn't a huge counter-attack on there where that foul, was committed. You know, the Conor Madden is a yellow card. It was just a reckless, stupid hit. It wasn't cynical. You know, the Donegal player wasn't going for a 1-2 or anything like that. I thought that was a yellow. On 50 minutes, there was some great high-intensity tackling by Cavan. A very soft free from McGonagall over on the sideline, who has been tackled by McKiernan and Brady, and that kind of at a stage of the game where you're like, Jesus, Cavan needed that turnover. And then he gave an even softer free for Neil Magee when that free kick was taken. In the first half, Martin O'Reilly was fouled. He was fouled so badly he actually stopped. He went, that's so obvious.
That then, was then, the worst of them. Maybe.
Yeah, then he got caught for over-carrying, and not only that, the free was brought up. Like, I mean, and the referee got an offensive mark by Gerald McKiernan completely arseways. That was a perfect mark. You know, there was a lot of decisions I thought went against Cavan. And again, like you say, Keane, a lot of things going against them, behind for a lot of the game, never gave up, never, you know, complained, kept playing the way they were playing. And like, I mean, Jesus, you couldn't speak higher of this Cavan team. Like, I mean, you'd just be blown away by them.
Ah, you would, yeah. And I suppose, look, like we said, if you analyse their record, I suppose, over the Ulster Championship, you can point to a lot of things that they didn't do well, and, you know, question the approach of Mickey Graham at times. And, you know, he got some things wrong, he got some things brilliantly right. And same with the players on the field. They did some fantastic things, and then they did some mad things as well. So I suppose they're flawed, and I suppose that's the beauty of it. I mean, like, we don't want really perfection, you know, as a spectator, you want to see mistakes, you want to see the sort of flawed approach, you know, this thing of a team having victory in front of them, and then they make some crazy mistake like Martin Riley does when he just has to hand pass the ball across the square for a tap in into the net. You're thinking, Jesus Christ, are they going to lose this? Like, there's Martin Riley, I think he's 34. He's been a brilliant player for Cavan for years. Is he now going to be the villain of this piece, having, you know, come so close to winning Ulster? Will Donegal go down and snatch it? And I suppose there's all of these little subplots throughout the thing. You know, you have Thomas Gallagher there getting decapitated, and, you know, thinking he's going to go off. Is he dead? Is he going to come back on at all? And, you know, then he's the hero with an incredible catch, which gets brought forward, and then they, you know, they get the goal from that play. So that sort of amazing things happen. And, you know, the refereeing decision, you know, if you look at them objectively, they were absolutely really, really, really bad decisions against Cavan. And if Cavan had lost that game, they would have had every right to feel really, really aggrieved, because when it was 15 versus 15, they were by a mile the dominant team in the first half, really, for large periods. When they got that black card once against them, it meant they couldn't press up as much as they would have liked on the Donegal kick out. And Donegal then got to play their way into the game, and get a bit of confidence and get a bit of rhythm. And then near the end, I suppose maybe they'd learned the error of their ways from the first half, because, you know, when they went down to 14 men in the latter stages of the game, they seemed to almost thrive on it. It was as if the harder the battle became, the better the Cavan players played. And I suppose that's really what any spectator of a team looks for, is that when the chips are down, that guys stand up, and that they, you know, that there's a ferocity of effort to make up for, you know, players being unavailable or a lad going off or things going against you, that lads knuckle down and really fight and fight and fight. And that's what Cavan did. And that's why they're so, I suppose that's why it's admirable, because there's, you know, they're not the sort of the polished article. They don't have, you know, incredible players all over the field, but by God, they have serious heart. And you can, the heart is visible when you watch them playing, which I think is sort of the most admirable thing that they're producing.
Yeah, no, definitely. And like, I mean, like you've mentioned, Conan, the variety of their play, you know, like, I mean, they had no problem slowing it down at times as they pushed. Like, I mean, it was mentioned in the commentary a couple of times how every Cavan player is in the Donegal half of the field, you know, so they had no problem doing what Donegal do, slow it down. You know, this, you know, long ball isn't on. Let's move players up on the zonal players and let's move it through the hands. Other times they go a long kick out, you know, and then they'd know, right, there could be a ball on here now for Gallagher inside. Like, he got a great point point out of a ball by Gerard Smith. Gerard, it wasn't a great ball. He just, you know, he won a ball he had no right to win. Then straight after that, then Conor Madden tries to give in a big long one to him. They hit Thomas Galligan with a couple of kickouts who came out to the number 11 position. Yeah. You know, like they kept Donegal guessing all the time. And then, of course, for the McKiernan pass for the goal. Like, I mean, we've mentioned on the show before, if Sean Patton has a weakness, it's in the air. Drop one onto the square. I thought they could have done it even more, that type of McKiernan ball, because, you know, once it goes over McFadden, now Patton has to deal with something and Galligan's going to be in challenging for it. And this is the advice I give loads of different teams, like Meath against Dublin, Kildare against Dublin, Laois against Dublin, against a favourite. You know, get a ball in there, stick one into the mix, and you could get a goal off a flick on or anything like that. Like, Cavan deserve a lot of credit for the variety of their kickouts, their attacking play, and the way they use Galligan.
They definitely do. And I think a lot of that came just from confidence. I think, like, especially during the first half, as Kane mentioned, but I think after, you know, once you get a feel for a game, I think the Cavan boys were probably confident that they were on top. Like, especially in the second half, this was the most annoying thing about the Conor Madden black card, because even, I think they were 10-8 down, but they had just shut Donegal down entirely. Like, you know, their matchups were perfect, and we'll probably get into that. But they quietened them. Donegal weren't doing anything. I think they offered two free kicks for the first 30 minutes of that second half. And I think Cavan just had such confidence from that. And yeah, we talk about the balls out to midfield, the long balls in. And then when they slowed it down, they had no problem running at some of the Donegal backs and just seeing, like, you know, who's up for it, who's got a soft shoulder. Let's get at them and see. And, like, they're all strong. They were confident in their own core strength. They'd come back out if they got into too much trouble. Like, Kane said they were very worthy winners. Like, they definitely were. And the thing for Donegal is that anybody watching that, like, and you did talk about putting balls in and testing out the keeper and the fullback line, like, that was such a bad error from Sean Patton. Like, he got his two hands on it. He wasn't under pressure. There were no people around him, but there was nobody jumping into him.
He should have caught it, Conan. He did the old soccer punch, and he didn't catch it as flush as he wanted, and he ended up just setting it up for Madden. Yeah. Like, I mean, you catch those balls, don't you?
Catch them. You catch any ball that you get two hands to, I think. Yeah, yeah. You know, and especially when you're under no pressure. So I think anybody looking at that will be thinking against Donegal next year, like, yeah, let's put a few balls in and see what he's made of.
Yeah, no, that was it. Martin Riley, you mentioned his goal chance, Keane. He really came into it when Owen McHugh went off. And this was a bizarre one. Owen McHugh actually played cornerback. I couldn't believe it. And he did well on Martin Riley. And Martin Riley then started to come into it. And you're right. Like, I mean, if you ever were to say fisted over the bar, I know you say fisted across, and that's fair enough. There was a Cavan man in there. But that was to put Cavan 2 points up in 68 minutes. You know, there was no way back, because Donegal had been already dragged into a fight that they just didn't have any fight for. You had Michael Langan with two very uncharacteristic wides. You had O'Boyle who came on with a wide. Brennan missed a goal chance, even though it wasn't a great goal chance, because James Smith probably had a better goal chance. Like, I mean, you know, at that stage, you have a Donegal team who were just completely out of sorts, and you had a Cavan team that could smell that they were out of sorts. I don't want to say that they were out of sorts. They weren't allowed play.
Yeah, look, they weren't allowed play, but I need to go back to that point, because there's no way Woolly Wee can advocate for fisting the ball over the bar after for all, it's against everything we stand for here. So I think we could run through the wide range of options he could have done. He could have just rolled the ball along the ground. He could have played it through the goalkeeper's legs. He could have done a solo dummy.
A dummy solo, yeah.
Or he could have done the very obvious thing, which was hand pass it to the unmarked Cavan man at the back post with an empty net in front of him. But nonetheless, they're all the available options before fisting it over the bar. Okay, the thing about it is, Cavan did create those opportunities. Like, the other opportunity, which, in fairness to Michael Murphy, he made an incredible effort to get back to put James Smith under pressure for that goal chance. He just threw his body on the line to just get any contact on Smith when he got in. But again, that was from a nice little piece of Cavan play and a lovely little foot pass into him to get him free. But, like, that was a gilt-edged opportunity, and it was thinking, you know, it was just going to cost Cavan the game. So I suppose, look, on the balance of play, they were the better team overall, because they created sort of better chances. And at the start of the game, they were really composed. They held onto the ball. They grew into the game then, as Conan was saying. They grew in confidence. And then when the game was in the melting pot later, they had enough of a foothold. They'd stayed in the game long enough through their efforts that They then started, things started to kind of flow for them, and they kicked a few magnificent doors. But early in the game, they did kick a couple of bad wides when they were under, you know, where they, which they could have capitalized on a little better. But James Smith pointed to the right wing near the end of the game was superb when the game was really there. As you, as Brandon said, put the ball under his arm, took on the Donegal defender, took the responsibility because he picked it up out on the sideline on the right wing. Yeah. You know, he had to travel 35 metres with it before kicking it. And then Oisin Kiernan kicked a phenomenal score off his left foot as well from the left wing. So, like, and they did speak about it afterwards in the interviews about how, you know, it was going to be, it was potential that it was going to be the last game of the year, so that they were going to have a bloody go at it. So I suppose that they've grown significantly as a team over the course of the Ulster Championship. And they started the game really well, and they grew into the game then as well because they knew they could compete. They gave themselves every chance to compete. It was, you know, being really, really good on the ball, being generally quite efficient when they got forward. I think they had, I think they maybe got 32 shots off from 34 attacks. You know, so that's very, very efficient attack and play, particularly when you consider that Donegal probably pride themselves on being this team that sort of can absorb a bit of pressure and can get back and flood their defence and maybe break out. But Cavan didn't really give them that opportunity. They used the space well. They had decent width in their play when the game did, you know, when Donegal did have bodies back. And then when they did have the opportunity, when there was space there, they kicked and they kicked long and they kicked out to the wings and they went direct at the goals. And, you know, they, as you've said on a few occasions, Woody, they had a lovely variety to how they played the game. And it kept Donegal thinking, even in terms of the positional switches, Gallaghan into full forward, then Gallaghan out and Martin Riley in to present a different type of threat. So look, it was really good from them. But Donegal, I suppose, will be very frustrated themselves with their own performance levels. I mean, they took the ball. You know, we give Cavan huge credit for how they stripped Donegal and their effort and endeavour in terms of chasing and trying to win the ball back. But Donegal will be very disappointed with some of the sort, I suppose, the decision making they made in possession, where they took the ball into the contact position when they didn't really need to. And I suppose they'll rue the loss of Kieran Thompson from the starting team. And I think Oisin Gallan as well not being available on the match day squad was a significant loss because, you know, they were struggling up front. Jamie Brennan didn't really have much of an impact on the game. Paddy McBrearty started brightly enough but faded out of the game. Weren't getting much supply, but Gallan has made a big impact in all their championship games, really, when the game has been tight. Certainly against Tyrone, he made an impact on the game. So I suppose they look at that and say, you know, if they had one or two more players, would that have made the difference to them?
Yeah, maybe they'd be thinking, like, I mean, Declan Bonner said after the game, he said over the whole 70 minutes, Cavan looked a hungrier side. We had a purple patch when we kicked 5 on the trot when Cavan had a man black carded. We didn't kick on. Cavan stayed in the game and we knew they would. Like, I mean, when you look at that, like, they scored 5 points in a row after the first Brady black card. So in the other 65 minutes of the game, Conan, they scored 7 points. Like, I mean, not good enough at all. I don't know, like, the Kieran Thompson, he was fit enough to come on. Are they looking at Dublin the following week? This is two weeks after? Like, this is an unusual championship. Usually you would have more time. Like, I mean, do you think they took their eye off the ball, Conan?
Oh, I can't see it. I don't think Declan Bonner would let that happen. And I think the Ulster Championship means too much to Donegal. Have they ever won 3 in a row like Jim McGuinness didn't? Like, that would have been huge for them as well. 2 weeks ago to Dublin, I don't think they took the right off the ball. The Kieran Thompson thing was just very strange, especially when he comes on and he's as lively and as dangerous as you know he is.
Yeah,
I don't know, did they overthink it? Or, like, you know, in comparison, Cavan just unleashed James Smith, who was on to have an unbelievable game. I don't know what it was with Donegal, but like, sometimes I can feel sympathy for a manager because he can only do so much. He puts him out onto the pitch and he gets him into positions basically based on whatever way they've trained. He needs to be able to create opportunities for them to go and score. And they still sort of did that, but like just so many times, basically at the start of that second half, like Michael Murphy was free inside and Owen Bond Gallagher just lobbed one up and Raymond Gallaghan just caught it. And Murphy was cracking up because he was out in front. And just simple bits of composure like that. Like you mentioned Langan's shots. There was a couple of shots that weren't on and they were just rushing. They got turned over more than I've ever seen. And to be honest, I haven't seen Ryan McHugh have as quiet a game in a few years as he did against Cavan. And obviously Jason McLaughlin has a big part to play in that. He was marking him. But McHugh was just on the periphery of the match. And when things are going bad for Donegal. Like he's the man who comes onto the ball and calms everybody down, and they just seem scrambled for most of the match. And I don't know what Bonner does, you know, once that's set in.
Yeah, well, that's it. Like, I mean, performance of the weekend, like, you could do a full show on this game, but obviously we have a huge match in Munster to cover as well. That's we'll performance of the weekend. Maybe McGonagall, you could mention from Donegal, but all the performances were on the Cavan side. Like, I mean, Mickey Graham has to be the first name on it. Like, I mean, what he's done here is just, it's just beyond belief. What he did with Mullan Octa, their first ever Leinster title against Kilmacud Crokes. And we spoke about that at length. That was as big a shock as you will ever see in club football. Again, it was a wet winter's day in December when they did it. Like, I think maybe is Mickey Graham a winter manager? We'll have to make our. He didn't do too well last year when the sun was shining in Clonmacnoise. I don't know what to make of Mickey Graham, Keane. I just don't. I love him. I really do like him. He's my generation. I liked him as a player. I just, like, this is just madness what this fella does as a manager.
Yeah, well, the one thing about him is he does bring great variety to his approach to games. I mean, yeah. There's a significant contrast, and they come up with a game plan for each different opponent, or even for segments of a game, which is also very interesting, really, considering it's a very flexible tactical approach. And what it does, I suppose, display is that his players have really bought into it with him. So, like, you can see that he comes across as a really likeable kind of a fella. He's obviously very passionate about Cavan football and about, you know, the group of players that he has. And I think when players have that, they can really buy into the charisma and I suppose the character of a manager. And then when he's bringing sort of interesting tactical things to it and challenging them in different ways, and then when the plans are working, I mean, you have the perfect storm there, because, you know, it's about having the variety to challenge different teams. Like, we speak a lot about having these formulaic things, and it's, you know, managers throwing out the same thing every time, no matter what team they're managing, no matter who their opponents are, and a very rigid approach. But the tactical sort of flexibility of Cavan management team, and also then of the Cavan players within that system, you know, it is quite interesting, and it makes them a very difficult opponent, because on any given day, they can challenge you in different ways. But they also have outstanding footballers. I mean, and they have big physical men with good skill level, and with, you know, with a level of athleticism and character and determination, which, you know, it's been a massively successful, I suppose, combination for them. And look, nobody would have seen it 8 weeks ago when they were getting relegated, that this was what was going to happen. But something has grown organically there. And I suppose, you know, in the year that's been in it, we've been very lucky to witness that over the course of 4 or 5 or 6 weeks, because we've, I suppose, had the chance to see even the Cavan County final being played in what was a great game of football that went, you know, the drawn game. And then we've had the opportunity to see all these Cavan players at county level then week on week develop in the Ulster Championship. So I suppose, yeah, look, as I said earlier on, he doesn't get everything right, but nobody ever does. But at least he's willing to have a go, and he can at times... Even it's, you know, that's why sometimes it's difficult to analyse them over the course of the 70 minutes, because they do seem to change so much. But I suppose that chameleon-like approach has served them very, very well.
No, it definitely has. James Smith deserves a mention here as well. He was a late call-up, and, you know, he was impressive in the club championship. Jeez, he goes into some great positions. Like, I mean, he scored 2 points, but he missed one too. He connected fairly well with the goal. He went for the corner. Like, Michael Murphy did get back on him, but he got a good strike on it. And I'd say he was going for that corner. Like, he goes into positions. He's a very, very good player, Conan, you know, and, like, whether it's probably played in midfield yesterday, hard to tell exactly. Could have been centre-forward. But in and around that area, his ability to get forward.
Yeah, and I suppose we saw that, yeah, for Crosserlock. Remember he kicked that equaliser in the first day out, where he just burst through, like, Kings Court had everybody back, and James Smith just took control, broke through bodies and kicked a monster score. And he just took control the next day out, and he won it for them. And actually, their manager at the time, David Lennon, had a good quote. He said, if he's not in the Cavan team, there's a lot of good footballers in Cavan that I don't know about. And, like, I think he went out and showed that then. He showed that he's just a quality footballer, and they've probably been well aware of this in training. And, yeah, it was the right call to release him. And, like, you're right. He gave them a different, and again, another different dynamic. Like, just that ability to break forward. You're talking, I don't know, was he midfield or half forward? Yeah, I think he was pretty much both. Like, just another sort of problem for Donegal that they couldn't get a handle on. Michael Murphy did well, obviously, to stop that goal chance, but James Smith was just rampant throughout the whole match, and for somebody sprang in for his first game, it was incredible to watch.
Yeah, another Smith, Gerard Smith, Keane, I thought was outstanding throughout, consistently in the thick of the action, not afraid to take on responsibility, you know, and go at a player, try and go past him, scored a good point. I thought throughout the whole game, he was very impressive.
Yeah, he's a lovely style about him. A very skillful player as well in terms of ball retention. The point that he got in the first half was really good. And the thing that was, I suppose, very interesting when you look back at the replay is he has Paul Brennan on his right shoulder, and he hops the ball with his left hand. Then he turns around and solos it right hand to right foot. Then he hops it right hand to right foot, and then he solos it with his left foot. So he's always keeping the ball, you know, on the opposite side to the where Brennan was tackling him from, and then spins and kicks a lovely score. And you see him very often when Cavan are trying to, in a phase of retaining possession, it's Smith that gets his hands on the ball and just calms the whole thing down for them. I think they, you know, his teammates obviously trust him. He's always able to turn away from the tackler and retain possession. And let's not forget, he's the man who kicked a brilliant score off the outside of his boot against Bonner. And so, I mean, like, he's been a massive contributing factor to Cavan in the success, and had a great game yesterday. But I mean, Garrod McKernan as well has just been exceptionally good for them, I suppose.
Yeah.
Just like he's just a man mountain. And again, like, when you have guys like James Smith, Thomas Gallagher, Garrod McKernan around that middle sector of the field, along with, you know, Killian Clark and these boys, I mean, like, they have big, big physical size, aggression, Faulkner even out around the middle. Like, they're very powerful players. And especially when the ground is heavier in these kind of, at this time of the year, that can be, I suppose, that sort of physical stature can be compounded a bit.
Yeah, I thought McKernan could have shot a few times and turned back. Now, there was one or two times he turned back when it seemed to be the right thing to do, but there was other times I thought, geez, why wouldn't he just, you know, try one from there? You know, I thought maybe he might have had that half yard. He was very good. Thomas Gallagher, I said last Thursday, Conan, like, I mean, he's in pole position for an All-Star. I'm going to say now, if Thomas Gallagher, because this fella is the exact type of player that could be ignored for an All-Star, because he's not a household name. You could see Garrod McKernan getting one ahead of him. They're now Ulster champions. Both of them are shoe-ins, as far as I'm concerned, for an All-Star. When you look at the big plays Thomas Gallagher has made in this championship, against Monaghan, against Down, against Donegal, like the catch in the first minute of injury time that led to the goal. Like, I mean, he'd no right to win that again. In the wars, went off with a head injury, came back on, able to make those big plays, scored a point. Like, I mean, he got a great catch from a kick out in the first half, and almost just without even thinking, it was like a set play. When he catches that 11, he just turned around and gave a diagonal ball, kind of almost over his shoulder, and it ended up in a point. Like, I mean, what this fella's doing, if this was Brian Fenton, had the four games that he had, genuinely, and the big moments in each game. Now, Fenton's a much better footballer than Gallagher, although Gallagher's an underrated footballer. Like, this is the greatest shoe-in for an All-Star I have ever seen.
It really is. Like, he has been phenomenal, and like, just a massive player making massive plays at massive times, like, you know, in all these huge games. And like, yeah, I don't know if it's because he's rough and ready. Like, yeah, yeah. You say Fenton's a better footballer, but he is the sort of boy that you might overlook. And also because he's playing in all these different positions, he's going to full forward, he's going to half forward, he's going to midfield. That's always poses a problem as well, I think, when they're making All-Star selections. But yesterday was crazy. Like, he genuinely looked like a county star that was playing club football. You know, just a level above, and he will catch the ball when he has to catch it, and he'll swat people away when he has to. Like, the way he won that sort of hot ball with Hugh McFadden, one of the biggest men in football, like, that summed him up. And you mentioned his injuries. Like, he got a head injury, seemed to hurt his spine. He got a big whack in the shoulder twice, cut on his eye. He seemed to chip a bone in his hand, I think. I don't know. Obviously, I haven't seen an x-ray of it yet, but he really hurt his hand. And then there was a couple of times when he caught the ball or hand passed it off, you could see him shaking his hand. So it was hurting him for most of that game as well. And there was not one thought in his head that he was coming off that pitch. And thank God he didn't. Like it was heartwarming to watch how good it was.
Yeah, I think Conor Madden deserves a shout out as well. 1-2, and like, I mean, you know, you can name loads of players: Faulkner, McLaughlin, you know, Clark, all these fellas from Cavan. Like, it was heroic stuff, you'd have to say. The performance of the weekend for me has to go to Thomas Galligan. I think even in the first half, he got a ball with his back to goal and went out and did kind of a dummy bounce. I was like, Jesus, what does this lad have in his locker that I haven't seen yet? Like, I mean, he's changed my mind from thinking, right, he's a big lump that is good in the air, to thinking he has more in him, you know, than just that. And he's a warrior, which he proved yesterday. And he's a clutch player at the most important parts of games when you need somebody to do something. And I've been in loads of games where you're just praying, please let a midfielder catch this clean. We just need this possession. Like, for him to be able to do that at a consistent level when it's needed, I'd say his half back line, half forward line, absolutely love him. I'd say his manager loves him. And, you know, I'd say he has a lot more people that love him around the country, especially when we've seen so much of him this year. So there you go. Performance of the weekend is to Thomas Galligan. We'll take a break, lads, and we'll come back for the Munster final.
I said, are you going to get up or are you going to stay in bed? I said, we have a game there about 3:30. If you wouldn't mind joining us. Didn't even start, like, didn't even go for the bag. Took his lie in, took his extra 5 minutes. It was like the snooze button. Hit the snooze button for another 5 minutes. Rolled out of bed. 1-7 that day.
All right, lads, so I thought this game couldn't be topped, right? So, like, I mean, the first time in 85 years, Tipperary again. The force was very, very strong here as well, lads, because this is a Tipperary team that scraped over Limerick. They needed a Conor Sweeney sideline ball. As I said at the start of the show, Tipperary would not have beaten Kerry yesterday on a fine day like it was. They just would not. Force or no force, but Cork of course beat Kerry to, you know, set it up. So now it's a team that we're not afraid of. We've beaten it underage, and, you know, we're very, very confident of beating them. And they were by far the better team in this. Whatever about Cavan, Tipperary were by far the better team. Conor Sweeney after the game, very, very impressive speech. No real crowd to react to, no notes, just completely natural off the cuff. And you're looking at him going, geez, what an impressive individual he is. And then he goes down and makes an interview afterwards, and he's talking about, you know, that won't, not today, it wasn't going to happen today, you know, the defiance of it. And he was asked about the occasion and said that he talked to the squad, you know, on the Tuesday night or the Monday night, and says, look, let's not you know, get carried away with the occasion. And I don't know, Keane, just everything the man says seems to be completely sensible, completely natural, and, you know, nothing, you know, no media training, just a complete natural fella who gave a very impressive speech, especially he'd no crowd to react to and give him the odd cheer every now and then.
Yeah, look, he's a mature adult. That's really what you could say about him. And he spoke very, very well. And it's very obvious the leadership role that he plays within that team,
yeah,
and within that squad. You know, but he does it, look, his words are, he's obviously a good speaker, and you can tell that if he's, you know, talking to the team on a given day, you know, he's going to be saying the right things more often than not. But look, his leadership in terms of getting vital scores when they need them and standing up and, you know, being the man that they deliver the ball to when they really need something to happen, I mean, look, that's what he's been for Tipperary for a number of years. And he's just, his consistency over the years has been absolutely phenomenal, putting up very, very big scores. You know, oftentimes when Tipperary were under pressure or weren't really, you know, getting the big victories that they needed, he still always done very well. And again, he was very, very sharp. The quality of his movement and the timing of his movement was absolutely brilliant at the weekend. You know, really, really patient, holding until the right opportunity, and then coming very lively off the shoulder, getting a couple of yards away from his man when it was needed, and clipping lovely scores. And look, what a fitting way for him as the sort of the captain and the leader of the team and the guy who's been sort of consistently doing it for a number of years, for him to deliver that performance when they get over the line in Munster is, you know, fantastic personally for him.
Yeah, so captain, winning captain and man of the match as well in the same final. Just incredible. And if you think that's not impressive enough, Conan, like, again, this was before we saw Cavan. And I says, I'm starting the show with Tipperary tomorrow. That's it, I'm decided. And then Cavan won't do that. And then, like, Tipperary, you're being pushed out to part two of the show. Then Colin O'Riordan follows it up. Like, I mean, and if you don't get emotional watching Colin O'Riordan, like, his interview blew me away. Like, he said, it's the best feeling I've had in many years. It just fills me with pride so much. I get emotional even thinking about it. To me, it's one of the best days of my life. Then he's talking about wearing the Tipperary jersey. He says, yeah, it's something I will never, ever take for granted and something I will respect until the day I die. And this is why I was blown away by this. Like, this is a fella who's over playing with Sydney Swans. This is a fella who plays football for a county where a lot of the supporters in the county don't even care about the football team. They're the poor relation. And he still, with his like mouth trembling, almost close to tears, talking about the pride. I was blown away by it because I've been interviewed after lots of matches, you know, at different times, and I've had some man of the matches. I've never spoke about the pride of playing for Leash. It never entered my head. Like, I mean, I was blown away by how much he spoke about that, considering this is Tipperary football. It's not that big of a deal to everybody outside Tipperary football community.
Yeah, outside that bubble, like I felt every single word that he was saying, and it really did. It all came from the heart. And I remember in 2017 on the podcast, you talking about, because I think this was the season after they got to the All Ireland semi final, and what was it, a few hundred people who showed up to Thurles for a championship match, and like, you know, we were talking about where the hell are the Tipperary supporters? Like, what more do they want? They have a really good team that got to the last four of the All Ireland, get behind them, but like, you know, and then that probably even just like the treatment of the hurlers. Obviously, they're in that county where they get treated better, and they obviously went on and won an All Ireland since. That probably just strengthens that bond and the will for all the footballers. And And for O'Riordan, like, you could tell as well how much he really wanted to play in this game and how thankful he was. You know, he did thank them, Sydney Swans, like, just for them to let him do it. Like, I'd say when he went and asked them, they could see it in his face and they could hear it in his voice, like, that this means the world to him, just to have this one chance to play one game for Tipperary. And it just so happens to be a once-in-a-lifetime match. And really, like, I know I get sort of emotional about this stuff anyway, but, like, that was honestly beautiful, and just seeing how much it meant to him, and like it brings you right back to the whole reason why we do this in the first place.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, I mean, those jerseys will be worth a fortune. Like, there's no doubt about that. Like, and I mean, they look absolutely class. Like, you know, it's not like they're ever going to sell them, you know, for them to be worth a fortune. Question is here, Keane, should they keep those jerseys now? You know, take off the bloody Sunday, you know, 100-year anniversary, take all that stuff off, put Tenio, their sponsor, on that green and white jersey and kind of ride that wave. Like, I mean, would that make sense?
No, I'd be totally against that. I think it's, I don't know why I'd be totally against it, really. It just wouldn't seem right. I'd like to purchase one of the jerseys because I think they're absolutely fast, but it wouldn't sit well with me. I think it was a commemoration jersey for an event. If they had
commemoration stuff off it, like that. Your colours at one time, obviously.
Yeah, well, I think if both hurlers and footballers were wearing those jerseys for the entire year, I could, you know, I think that'd be fair enough. But I think, look, they wore it for that occasion, you know, on the weekend of it, and it was a commemorative thing, and leave it at that. But look, again, whatever, I'm sure some psychologists will say that there's benefit to doing it, but personally for me, I'd like to see it that they have that moment, and that it's an amazing moment for them, but they can't repeat that moment. You know, they have to try and generate a new moment down the line and create another bit of history, we'll say. So I think they need to, you know, sort of acknowledge it for what it was, you know, let it sink in over the next week, they've 2 week break, and you know, look at it and take great pride in it, and then move on to the next step. And I have no doubt that that's, you know, I'm sure that with the things that Sweeney was saying, I'd say that's kind of the approach he'll probably take for the whole thing. But I suppose, yeah, there's a sort of the romantic in us all would probably like to see them wear that jersey and, you know, get to an All-Ireland final and play Dublin, you know, that kind of way, where it's just, you have that sort of, you know, amazing bit of poignancy to it.
Yeah, I'm getting carried away with the emotion, obviously. I might need to talk to a sports psychologist or something here to really pull me back down to earth. It's not hard to get carried away with all this stuff. And I think probably your analysis there, Keane, is right. They should go back to their other jerseys. Conan, I want to talk about the Tip goal, because like, this was a big moment in the game, because Tip were 12-7 up. That would have put the game out of sight, and Tip could have swung over a few nice, you know, points towards the end and run out easy winners, because they were easy winners, really, on the day. Like, I mean, terrible defending by Paul Ring, you'd have to say. What was he doing flapping at that? Like, I mean, that what he could have just caught that. I know he's a young player and everybody makes mistakes. He just flapped at it, threw it down. It was thrown across, back across the field, and it was Casey who ran back in from an off-the-field position. And Stephen O'Brien was in the square, but he had got up from being on the ground. You know what I mean? He didn't seem to be interfering with anything, and the pass wasn't for him. So, like, I mean, there was total confusion in the commentary. Like, I mean, that commentary of that game, when you have Marty on football, and Marty's very weak on football, that's putting it nicely, and you have Desi with him. It was like two transition year students, you know, trying to analyse and commentate on a game. Names being gotten wrong, marks being called freeze, you know, just general terrible. I just had to turn the volume down on the commentary. And that's, I don't want to disrespect the two lads. I just want to call it as I see it, because I really like Desi Dolan. I will defend them on this, in that it was a very, very hard call. My first instinct on it was that he'd come in from off the field, and the goal was right to be disallowed, because Conor Madden only last week was analysed on the Sunday game and saying coming in off the pitch like that is against the rules. And that is, now it took them about 10 minutes to come up with this, and it was wrong in the end. It was like they got a text, or like, you know, someone, friend might have texted them, because they started going to town then on that reason. And, you know, like, as it turns out, the goal should have stood. Conan, you got some confirmation on this?
Yeah, like, it's, you're right, because I thought that as well. The only confusing thing for me watching it was that Maurice Deegan clearly signaled a square ball. So
he completely guessed. I mean, he blew the whistle before the ball had even got to the man who tapped it in. He blew a free against Stephen O'Brien for being in the square. He blew it early. He didn't even see the Tipperary man coming in to knock it to the net. So, I mean, look, let's not talk too much about Maurice Deegan. He nearly ruined that game again, blowing the free that weren't frees. Ridiculous stuff.
And but that's the thing. That's the thing. I would be annoyed with Desi Dolan. He agreed with some of the worst refereeing decisions I've ever come across, Conor. Like, I mean, always made out that Maurice Deegan's having a good game. It's like, what game are you watching? He's blowing some ridiculous calls here.
Oh, and the first 20 minutes, you know, little like fouls that you wouldn't really think of too much, but he was handing Luke Connolly scores, and every time, like, Desi Dolan was saying, yeah, easy to decision there, like, over a replay of nothing happening. You're like, what are you
I thought that the best one was Colin O'Riordan. The slow-mo replay clearly showed Colin O'Riordan with his hands out, not making any contact with the tackle, waiting to time it to tackle the ball. And, you know, Desi Dolan saying that, oh yeah, he just rushes in, over-eager there to get the tackle in, while the replay on the screen was clearly showing him making absolutely no contact.
His hands out. He gave Morris no other choice there. He had his hands out. He wasn't even trying to tackle him.
But, like, back to the goal, like, Maurice Deegan was wrong to call a square ball. Like you mentioned, Stephen O'Brien's in the square, right? But he's allowed to be in the square because he doesn't have time to get back out. Like, that's the rule. He doesn't have time to get back out by the time it's played back in. And it's not gone to him. It's gone to Casey, who's come in off the pitch. Yeah, so we probably all thought of the Madden thing. But Casey was knocked off the pitch. He was shoulder charged off the pitch. So he didn't run out to gain an advantage. Which
he didn't deliberately leave the field today.
To be fair though, Conan, like, in Desi and Marty's defense, that is a difficult one to get right on a live game.
That is one that I will give him one lifeline for on that. Like, and it was tough, but on both counts it should have been a goal. Like, it wasn't a square ball, it wasn't deliberately off the pitch, and that would have been game over for Tip there and then.
Yeah,
I think the rule on it, Wooly, really, I mean, the spirit of that rule is that if a ball is being kicked in from a 45 or something, that someone can't gain advantage by running 5 yards behind the end line to try and leap and pass the ball. I mean, let's face it, if the ball is near the sideline and you just about keep the ball in play and flick it past the player, run out over the sideline and gain possession, that's not a deliberate attempt to gain advantage. Your momentum takes you over the line. There's nothing you can really do about it. They're not fouls, like.
No, they're not fouls. And to be honest, if it wasn't Conor Madden's goal and the analysis around that, kind of had that in my head off the pitch, you know, goals should be disallowed. But anyways, like, the one thing on the commentary that really annoyed me in the first half, it was like, I think it was Stephen O'Brien. He's wearing white bicycle shorts. Michael Quinlivan wasn't wearing white bicycle shorts. And he gave a lovely ball in off the outside of his boot. And Marty, of course, gets the name wrong, got names wrong the whole way through it. And you have Desi saying, yeah, well, that was a great ball by Michael Quinlivan. I told you now he was an important player and he's after coming into the game. And it wasn't even him that gave the pass. Like, I mean, basic analysis around something that didn't even happen. Like, it was absolutely gas stuff. But, like, I mean, I suppose the analysis of this one, lads, to get into that is, like, it's very, very easy. And I want to start with Cork. Well, let's start with Cork. It's all kind of interlinked, right? Because it was like Cork had never seen Tipperary play this year or ever seen any sort of video of Tipperary. We knew last Thursday, we said Quinlivan and Sweeney will be left up front of their own. Tipperary are a pretty defensive team. Now, even Colin Rourke said in the analysis afterwards, Tipperary looked like they were playing great football and looked like a very good footballing team. That's because Cork allowed hit them on the counter-attack. And we've said it for years. When a defensive team gets easy turnovers, especially around their 45, they look swashbuckling. They look great to commit bodies to attack. You know, then they get a couple of good scores and it looked great. This was all Cork's fault. I've never seen a team more clueless playing against a defensive team in all my life. And you contrast it to the teams that can play well against the Dublins, the Cavans, the Donegals. You slow down the attack. You don't go 100 miles an hour in ones and twos and leave their double sweeper in there and then try and force kick passes in when all the double sweeper is going to do is double up on your man. What do you do when you're faced with a defensive system? You slow down the attack. You move players up on the zonal players that Tipperary are trying to have back to double up. You spread your attack out. You angle your runs infield from the players that spread out. You come around on the loop. Did you see Cork once come around on the loop? Did you see them once try to be patient? It was like a big panic. Right, we're on the 45 now and Tipperary has loads of players back. Well, I'm just going to go running through here and now he gets, bottled up. It was like, what is going on here? Like, I mean, Cian, Christ almighty, did you ever see a team more clueless? And to be fair, make Tipperary look like a sensational team. This was almost like maybe tactics from 2014 tricking another team out.
Yeah, it was. Look, it was desperate stuff from Cork. But I mean, look, it wasn't. It was nothing new, really. I mean, they faced the blanket defence against Kerry, and they didn't really fare much better. It was just, I suppose, the nature of that game meant that the focus was more on Kerry than on Cork. And we spoke about how Cork's attacking play was pretty poor on the day, you know, saved by probably some very good scores. But I mean, against Tipperary, it was just poor stuff. It was very static. When Connolly went off, they didn't really have that, you know, any support inside for Hurley. Mark Collins was trying to come out the field to try and make things happen, but it's very difficult for one player. He's getting on the ball and he's trying to play a creative pass and play, but there's just no space for him to play that ball into. So Cork players just weren't really doing enough. They weren't keeping within the game. And it was probably, the wrong players maybe at times getting on the ball. Very central in the pitch as well, more often than not. I mean, there was no attempt to even bring the ball down the wing and then maybe recycle the back and play it to the open side, pick free up a shooting opportunity. No method. There didn't appear to be any method to the Cork attack. Now, look, again, sometimes there can be all the, you know, that the coaches could have gone through an awful lot of this and then maybe they go behind in the game and they're a young team, you know, they've some young players and their mind gets scrambled or, you know, they make some skill errors and underfoot conditions are a bit snippy. And I'm trying to make excuses for them here, but their attacking play was really, really poor. They didn't actually challenge Tipperary's defence in any meaningful way to make life difficult for them. Tipperary went back into their shell, Cork turned the ball over, and Tipperary at times were quite poor themselves trying to work the ball up, trying to work the ball out from their own defence. But when they did get, I suppose, that fast break from their own 45, you know, they kicked some magnificent scores, particularly in the first half.
Yeah, and like I suppose the scores then that they're getting is Sweeney coming out, you know, on the loop and the defence, Cork defence turned and chasing and kind of, you know, panicked a little bit. The often for Cork, especially in the second half when Collins came out the field, and he did all right when he came out the field, at least he was trying. Often the time somebody could be on the ball for Cork, Conan, and the only person that they have inside or in front of them is Brian Hurley. And this poor chap, we know his movement's good. He's running over and back and over and back. And often the kick pass into him was terrible. Even if he caught the kick pass, you know, one of the Tipperary double covering players was going to double up on him anyway. So it was a complete waste of time. And you contrast Cavan or Donegal. When their ball carrier has the ball, how many options do they have in front of them? They have, because they've moved players up and they have taken the zonal players, most of them, you know, maybe bar one. And in that scenario then, when you have done that and you have taken Tipperary's zonal players away from them, a kick pass might appear then, you know what I mean, out of nowhere when everyone's paired off. But the Cork thing, they looked like they had no options because they'd nobody ahead of the ball.
By complete contrast, you mentioned Tipperary. Like, they just had such energy as well. When they turned the ball over, it was almost like Dublin-esque, where boys ran flying forward ahead of the ball to give people more options. Like, Cork, I know we're saying, like, have they never seen Tipperary play? Have they not played football for the last 10 years? It's so strange that they've come up against this system and, like, had no ideas. There was a stage in the second half where Rory Dean was coming across and Mark Collins had come out, like you say, and Dean had to get around Mark Collins, who was just standing there watching him. And like that sort of summed up the lethargy. There was no urgency in anything they did. They had no invention yet. Like Brian Hurley, I think he won like two balls in the second half. And both times you were like, fuck, fair play, Brian, because he was under such pressure. But of course, when he won it, there was nobody around him. It was like, honestly, it was like watching a team getting caught by Donegal in 2011 and not knowing what to do, kicking it into to poor Paddy Bradley, who has seven men beating him up and nobody in support. It was thoroughly disappointing from Cork, and I'm like complete opposite. It was brilliant from Tipperary.
Yeah, that's what really disappointed me from a Cork point of view. If you're talking about them beating Kerry, Ronan McCarthy said after the game, our decision making was poor. We rushed our offence, which maybe makes you think in some way they might have spoken about this. But like, I mean, geez, I don't know. Like, I mean, just Cork, I just couldn't believe. It's just very, very hard to believe that in this day and age, like we've seen Laois play the likes of Carlow, who might be a bit more defensive than Tip, but not all that much. Laois handling this. Like I thought after Dublin beat Tyrone in 2017. These systems, Cork might have made the game look a little bit less boring. Tipperary wouldn't have looked as good. But listen, Cork would have controlled those attacks and would have got through them. And the favourite generally beats the defensive team, Keane. That's what we've been analysing for 3 years now. And we've gone back in time. Like, it's incredible stuff. I don't blame Tipperary. They took their chances on it. And like I said, when you get players back, and your zonal players aren't occupied, you will get your turnovers. And if you get turnovers on the 45 especially, boom, you know, and that counter-attack looks absolutely fantastic. And to be fair, Tipperary looked fantastic on it at times yesterday.
Ah, they did, yeah. Like, in fairness to Tipperary, when it did work for them, it does look very good because the transfer of the ball can be very quick from end to end.
Yeah.
And players are flying up the field and they can get some lovely scores. But look, it's down really, like Cork were the ones that had possession and it just, unfortunately for them on the day, look, Ronan McCarthy, as you mentioned, pointed out a bit poor decision-making in possession. So, I mean, look, that's ultimately what it comes down to. Like, there was a few very careless sort of passes from Cork that just gave Tipperary energy in the game. Like, Cork got the kind of, you know, really started very well. And Cork kind of got their way into the game, got a couple of soft frees to put themselves back level and maybe go ahead. And then they just, I suppose, gifted Tipperary these counter-attack opportunities. And it was kind of foolish because Cork were neither doing one thing nor the other. They kind of went to a certain point and they were all, I suppose, in a line across the Tipperary screen. They didn't push in and try to make some runs and drag Tipperary defenders out of the way. Like, I'm not advocating. Look, nobody wants to see the whole team run up the field and stand up there. I mean, like, that doesn't work either. But it would seem to me like that they just maybe had guys that were just a little bit unsure. Maybe they're very, you know, some young players in there, but just didn't really have the know-how to manage the game. And I suppose maybe the occasion of a Munster final maybe got to them. And, you know, there are some external factors that maybe had an impact. But on the pitch on the day, they didn't do enough. Their decision-making was poor. Their movement was very poor from an attacking perspective. They didn't do enough. And then when they were defensive, you know, when they were out of possession, they didn't do enough either. They didn't cover up the gaps quickly enough. It was as if they were caught ball watching an awful lot of the time when Tipperary were breaking forward. So look, they'd be extremely disappointed from their own perspective that they didn't perform, I'm sure, to the level that they would have expected of themselves. And I suppose that's the one thing when it comes to these knockout games. You have to be able to perform on the day. And Tipperary had more players who performed well. And they also had, you know, they got some magnificent scores from Quinlevin and, you know, in particular Quinlevin, which was sort of a difference maker in the end. But the Tipperary were the more dominant team, right? And they should have had game out of sight that goal before it was.
Yeah, no, I know they definitely should have. They were definitely the dominant team. We'll get on to some of their brilliant performers in performance of the weekend. Again, all on the Tipperary side. David Power, because we were speculating last Thursday, myself, Ger and Conan, about how they would use the emotion of this. And Conor Sweeney said they parked it. David Power pretty much said the same thing. So they didn't touch on it at all. And we were kind of speculating that might not be a bad idea to touch on it somewhat, kind of to wind up your players. He said to be wearing that green and white jersey was an honour, an absolute honour. And that's all. We kind of left it at that. At the end of the day, we had to play that match because if we really, really got caught in the emotion, you might get caught. David Power is an unusual one, Conan. Like, he doesn't strike me as an inspirational type of fella at all. Like, he seems a very unassuming sort of fella, not the best communicator in interviews, you know? Like, I mean, some great shots of him at the final whistle where he just looks up in the sky and walks around going, oh my God. Like, I mean, this is a manager, again, now who's won a Munster title for the first time in 85 years, won a minor All-Ireland against a Dublin team, and we know the list of players that was on that. John Small, McCaffrey, Mannion, Lowndes, all these fella. Like, it was a list of players who are now dominating at senior level. And I know because of the character David Power is, he will never get the credit that if Mick O'Dwyer had just did those two things. Again, a bit like Thomas Gallagher and Brian Fenton, when you're built up to be, you know, you, sometimes you deserve, obviously, the attention you get. David Power will never get it because he's unassuming. And I don't think David Power gives a shit that he'll never get it.
I don't think he does. I think you're right. Like, he, I think he genuinely just cares mostly about Tipperary. And, like, you know, he saw that. Like, he's just a, he breathes it. Like, the way he mentioned all those other coaches, like, they just came to his head like that. He knew who was all involved in this. He's talked about knowing that minor team would win in All-Ireland. He thought it would be 2012. It was 2011. And yeah, Conor Sweeney gave him a great nod as well afterwards, and it was typical Conor Sweeney. There's no bullshit. There's no waste of words. He just said, "David, like, shout out to you. Your first year, you're doing all right, lad." And, like, I thought that just summed it up best. And he's 37 years of age. Like, he might end up getting a lot more credit on down the line. But
if Conor Sweeney had followed the script, well, there's one man left that I have to thank.
That's myself.
He took us over this year when nobody said we could do it, and that man is David Power. Yeah.
What about Dan? Just while we're on it, poor Raymond Galligan didn't get to make a speech because whoever was presenting him with the trophy walked off with the mic, and Galligan was sort of standing there. He lifted the trophy, hung around, and then got the hell out of there because Cavan were celebrating.
None of the Cavan boys were able to talk after the game anyway. I think Raymond Galligan was only delighted, I'd say, that he had time to gather himself.
But yeah, but that's like, I mean, like, definitely David Power took the attention off himself, you're right, and talked about, you know, other managers. He's definitely in for performance of the weekend. It's not often that I put both managers in for performance of the weekend, lads, but other nominations, all in the Tipperary side again. Conor Sweeney, just incredible. Two marks, three from play and two frees. I think it was seven in total. So five, you'd say. Are marks called from play or the marks? I think they should be called from play anyways. They're not frees. They're kind of, okay, we'll just call them marks. I don't know. I mean, you want leadership. You're looking at a mark at the very start of the game, Cian. You're looking at a mark at the very start of the second half. Marty might have called it a free, but it was a mark. And then, you know, I suppose Tipperary's great start was down to it was down to a good few of them, but it was the captain that said, we're in this game, we're here to play. And that was all down to Sweeney.
It was, yeah. No, very sharp, like I said earlier on, very sharp in his movement for the first score from play, where he just comes in it, you know, this sort of a 10 metre burst just straight onto the hand pass and clips it over his shoulder. Lovely score. And the score he got in the second half from play was a brilliant one where Quinlivan chipped it down along the ground to him. It's low. He has to gather it low. It's a difficult one with the defender on his back. You could see he was trying to slip it to the Tipperary runner coming through, realised it wasn't on, and then just sort of posed himself, steadied up, and despite pressure from about four Cork defenders around him, clip the score. I mean, like, they're just invaluable to a team. Like, how many times do we see in games a forward wins a ball like that down low? He's under a bit of pressure. He tries to fumbles it or doesn't gather it first time, or then makes a wrong decision and tries to play a pass that's not on, or worse again, takes the shot and it drops into the keeper's hands, you know? So just all of those things were just bang on for Sweeney. And at key times in the game, like certainly the start of a final like that, where you're the underdog, it is very, very important to get a good start because it just gives a bit of confidence to the team.
Yeah, no.
That was a crucial one. And then obviously the one in the second half came at the right time for them. Kind of, I think maybe put 4 points up or 3 points up at the time. So there were key scores.
Yeah, there were definitely key scores. Michael Quinlivan. Michael Quinlivan, if you're playing against Tipperary and he's out around the midfield, like, I mean, you're kind of delighted about it. He's in a position where he was in with Sweeney, but he was kind of out in front of Sweeney as well. He was getting on the ball a bit further from goals. He got, I think he got four from play in total and one free. Like, I mean, the point from play he got from the bad kick out by Micheál Martin, I was sure, because Quinlivan is an audacious type of player and he does like scoring goals. I thought he'd whack that off the outside of the boot into the empty net. Did you, Conor? Like, he went for the inside of the boot and it actually hit the stanchion. It was going to drop. It wasn't that far off getting a goal there.
No, I thought he was actually lining up to do it as well, but he seemed to slip. I think that was his first instinct. Just hit the outside of the boot to let it go over or sail into the net. And he slipped and he just hit it then because somebody was closing down on him. And you're right, it hit the crossbar. But like, it's three scores in the first half. Obviously, the outside of the boot one on the wing was class. But the two that he got with his instep were just like fine, like a corner forward score. It's something that a top-tier corner forward would do.
Yeah, as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and he's under pressure and he has to lift it over a block. And like, in fairness to Desi Dolan, like, he knew that he was a good player as well, so he had as well warned that Michael Quinlivan would do something.
Yeah, well, to be fair, without really giving Desi the boot, Colm O'Rourke did a piece on Sweeney and Quinlivan as if he's like, you know, showing us two players that we wouldn't be very very familiar with. And then at the end of the game says, yeah, now the two players that I pointed out before the game, they were the two that probably came to the fore. You know what I mean? You might not like to slag off a Meade, man.
Oh no! I mean, look, if we could all give it and take it, but I mean, like, yeah, I mean, he didn't really give us much new there, Colm, to be fair, but I suppose he was right too.
Yeah, no, look, he was dead right. Like, if Tipperary were going to have to win, those two fellas were going to have to play well. Colin Reardon was very good right throughout. Big, strong presence. And I thought Stephen O'Brien, Tipperary would not be pushed around by anybody. When you have the big men that they have, Liam Casey was very, very good right throughout. You've Liam Casey, O'Reardon and Stephen O'Brien. Like, I mean, these are big units out around that midfield. Like, I mean, you're not going to be pushing them around or beating them aerially very easy. Then they have the two boys inside. They have Robbie Kiley and Bill Maher. We didn't see much of Bill Maher in an attacking sense. Robbie Kiley had a great battle with Rory Dean and definitely came out on top of that. I thought Kevin Fahey at centre back played very well. He came off injured towards the end, but again, one of those zonal players and out like a light on players, Conan, whenever, and a real combative kind of warrior type player.
Yeah, and I actually think like Bill Maher sort of had the same sort of game as him. Like, we didn't see him go forward as much, but it was just a dirty sort of performance, which is sometimes more satisfying. And I think Fahey sort of led the way in that terms, where they were just holding that fort on the 45 and like, yeah, getting stuck in. Brian Fox is coming around. Like, Tipperary just, they won a lot of just dirty ball as well. And they talked about that afterwards as well. Like, you know, I think it was, might have been Conor Sweeney just talked about everybody going out and winning their battles. Like, and that's sort of, was lined throughout the whole team, and Fahey was to the fore of that.
Yeah, it definitely was. Like I said, Liam Casey deserves a mention as well. Jimmy Feehan, excellent, excellent too. Evan Comerford got that important 45 when it was needed too. So, like, I mean, did loads of good performances, but I think Conor Sweeney was head and shoulders above everybody else on the field. And as captain, what a satisfying feeling for Conor Sweeney to wake up this morning, to be captain of the team and lift the cup for the first time in 85 years and to be man of the match. So not only are you the captain, you led by example, you were the best player on the field and you did, oh my God. Once before, I was man of the match in a county final as captain. And I can only tell you, that's a much lower level than Conor Sweeney achieved yesterday. The sense of satisfaction that you've done your job as captain and you've won. And, you know, you're supposed to be the leader and you did it and you're man of the match. Listen, I'll let Conor Sweeney describe it maybe sometimes because... you know, I can only imagine what it's like for him to wake up this morning. We'll try and get some of the Tipperary and Cavan players or managers on the show on Thursday and we'll do a show. There's not enough time to get any interviews today. So yeah, Conor Sweeney performance of the weekend. We'll come back and we'll talk about the shambles that is the Leinster Championship.
Conan Doherty is a fantastic analyst and I mean, I really heed what he would say in your programme.
I think Tyrone are going to win. I'm going to go with them. As much as I predicted Dublin to win the All-Ireland at the start of the year, I just think Tyrone are going too well. They're unaffected by the other team. Too well set up. I think they've been preparing for Dublin for 2 years. They're ready for them. I'm going to go with them. Yeah.
All right, so lads, I don't know about G, but I don't see the point in analysing this game. This was just a complete domination, a complete destruction of a team that was in Division 1, you know, this year, and a decent team, and a team that if they were in Ulster, if they're in Connacht, you know, could be in finals and potentially winning them. When you see Roscommon winning Connacht, you know, you see Cavan winning Ulster, who's to say Meath or Kildare couldn't win those provinces? I think they could. And based off, you know, winning that, you know, all the knock-on effects of confidence, momentum, you know, interest within the county, all those things to improve your county and take you to the next level, all those things, you know, you can improve on. The Leinster Championship is a joke. It's a farce. And it has been for a long time now. Dublin have won 15 of the last 16 championships. The winning margins, even in the finals, like, it's just absolutely scary. So you would say Dublin's biggest threats, if you call them that, in Leinster are Meath and Kildare. Right. And then after that, you'd probably say Laois and Westmeath. And that's based on who's been reaching the finals. The last six finals, Dublin have beaten Meath by 16, Laois by 18, Kildare by 9. And Kildare were lauded after that for, you know, putting up such a great performance. Westmeath by 15, Westmeath by 13, and Meath by 16. Dublin are 100-1 on to beat the Ulster champions in Cavan. Like, I mean, it's hard to know what to say about this Dublin dominance and how it's going to go from Leinster into the All-Ireland series. Dublin beat Mayo last year by 10 points. They've destroyed Roscommon in the Super 8s. They've destroyed Galway in an All-Ireland semi-final. They've destroyed Tyrone in Croke Park in an All-Ireland semi-final. They've destroyed Monaghan in an All-Ireland quarter-final. They've destroyed Cork in the Super 8s last year by 13 points. The only teams they haven't destroyed is an old Mayo team that's now gone, because they've destroyed this Mayo team, or they destroyed Mayo's team last year by 10 points, and we'll have to see what they do to this new Mayo team, because it's completely different to the one that was able to put it up to them, and Kerry. And to be honest, they've destroyed Kerry on a couple of occasions as well. They probably did beat them very well by 6 points in the replay last year. Kerry had 15 men versus 14 men in the drawn one. This is a complete an utter worry for the association, Keane. There is no doubt about that. Like, I mean, you can't... Leinster Championship is... What's the point of it, Keane? What is the point of it for... And what's the point of it for Dublin? It's gotten to the stage now where it's a farce. Let's stick to the Leinster Championship for now. I'm sure if Dublin wins 6 in a row, we can maybe extend it to the All-Ireland Series. But what is the point of the Leinster Championship at the moment?
Yeah, well, look, it's very frustrating for all concerned, because, I mean, it's effectively over before it starts in many respects. And I suppose, look, the real disappointment, I can only look at it from, say, a Meath perspective, is that I suppose there was always traditionally the expectation that Meath would, you know, the whole thing of, oh, Meath won't fear Dublin and all this sort of stuff. I mean, like, there's a reason that was said. I mean, like, historically, Dublin have, you know, we're always going to be the winners of the Leinster Championship. Look at the population advantage they have. I mean, like, it doesn't take a rocket scientist. But I suppose the era I grew up in was of Meath competing with Dublin and beating Dublin. And maybe that was a bit of a golden era in the late 80s and early 90s. And even into the 2000s, you know, in fairness, Meath started to drop off at that stage. And that was when the real Dublin dominance started to begin. And I suppose in the early 2000s, you had Laois and Westmeath were exceptionally good teams. And in the late 90s, you know, in early 2000s, Kildare had a really good team. And I suppose even in the mid-2000s, Kildare had a very good team. We were quite good. You know, I think if you look at it, like, we got to an All-Ireland semi-final 2007, 2009. Pretty sure Kildare got to one in 2010. And in 2008, Wexford, I think, got to an All-Ireland semi-final. So, I mean, like, there were other teams in the province who were, you know, quite good teams. I think in 2010, Westmeath might have beaten Dublin in 2008, I think Westmeath beat Dublin in a Division 2 league final in Navan. So, I mean, like, the Dublin dominance has really been 2010 onwards. I mean, from the time that they won their first All-Ireland since 95, I mean, it's been a cakewalk. I mean, they've been progressively getting further and further away from teams in Leinster. Yeah. So in my time of playing, I suppose, I always would have looked at it and thought, no inferiority complex for me as a Meath player, as an individual or as a collective team. We always felt like we were going out to play Dublin and give them, you know, we were going to give them a game, and we had a real tangible chance of winning the match, always with that expectation. And it used to drive me mad, because I'd be watching teams that we would be playing against within the province that would give us right games or beat us in matches, and then they'd go out against Dublin and they would fold after 10 or 15 minutes because they didn't believe they had any chance of competing. But that used to drive me mad as a player, because I was thinking, what is the story with these players, these teams? Like, why are they just giving up before they've even started whenever they play Dublin? And they don't do that against other teams. But there's a real thing now where there are no teams within Leinster who probably, in the cold light of day, think they have any realistic chance of beating Dublin. And that's a very, very sad state of affairs. You know, that you have counties with the population and the tradition of Meath and Kildare. And, you know, in the players, when they're in the bubble, will always look at it and will always take the positives because they have to, I suppose, justify the time commitment they're putting into something and try to, I suppose, to a certain extent, postpone their disbelief or, make some case for the, you know, that they have a chance here. But I mean, like, it's becoming less and less likely. And the worst of it is, the more this cycle continues, I mean, the harder it is to arrest the whole slide. And really, it's already gone way too far. And I suppose the GAA as an organization really have to look at it because nobody was interested in watching the Meath Dublin game after 10 minutes or 15 minutes. Nobody. Everybody watched to the end the two games played on Sunday because there was an actual contest, you know, on. Like, I think we're going to look, it pains me to say it, but I mean, like, Dublin are probably going to beat Cavan by about 15 points, and they're probably then going to win the All Ireland final by 10 points plus. And that trend is most likely going to continue for the next number of seasons.
Yeah, and that like, if that's not a wake-up call, this dominance, Conan, like, I mean, because when Dublin hadn't won a Leinster, they went from 95 without winning a Leinster until, was it 2002? Yeah, when Tommy Lyon came over.
I mean, like, there's counties out there, like, Tipperary hadn't won a football title for 85 years.
Yeah,
where was the funding there?
Oh, exactly.
Well,
they obviously said that there's some kind of idea out there that the GAA needs a strong Dublin, right? And whatever, it's probably for commercial reasons and things like that. So they decided that Dublin weren't achieving what they should be achieving. And they sat down strategically to improve Dublin football. And that is with both government funding, from Bertie Ahern government, and it is true, absolutely, in my eyes, shockingly disproportionate games development money from the GAA, and that's been pumped in since 2005. And if you're telling me that has no difference, in the meantime, Dublin have been able to hire a full-time CEO, they've been able to put structures in place, marketing team, marketing departments, they're able to put a professional setup in all of the clubs with full-time professionals running the show, not poor amateurs, the father of one of the players trying his best to try and keep it going. That's what's happening in the other counties. This is not a level playing field. They play all their games in Croke Park, all their important ones, all their league games. Croke Park is their home ground. They've been a majority of the support. If you're telling me all these things don't mean anything, then you're talking absolute shit. You don't know what you're talking about. And any Dublin supporter that is very, very honest with themselves will have to admit that this is a completely unfair situation. And unless the only solution to this is, because you don't want to roll back on the funding either, because if you roll back on the funding, rugby's strong in the north, in the south side of Dublin, soccer's strong in the north side of Dublin, you might lose footholds in these schools and you might lose it to GAA. And then what are you going to do? Like, I mean, the only solution, as far as I'm concerned, is to break Dublin up into four different teams, north, south, east and west. And let's see, and make it some bit fairer, because right now, with the structures, the sponsorship money, with all these things they have in place and the professional setup, that the other teams just don't stand a chance. Like, and there is an argument to say that the other teams, especially in Leinster, have gone backwards, and they have. Have they been beaten into submission? Have they given up? Who knows the answer to that? Like, I saw James Dolan, like a Westmeath player, a brilliant wing back, tweeting after the Leinster final, give Dublin a buy into the Super 8s next year and let the rest of us fight out for Leinster. Dublin are in a league of their own. They do this to every team in the country, bar two or three. Now, I could not even imagine myself ever tweeting anything like that if Twitter was around when I was playing. I couldn't look at myself in the mirror to think that I would actually admit that as a player. And I don't know whether to credit James Dolan for it or whether to go, Jesus, mate, you know, I don't know. Maybe he's just very, very realistic about it. But like, I mean, you look at the situation for James Dolan and like, I don't know, Conan, like, I've played on a Laois team who beat Dublin once, who won Leinster, who were in around the mix. I'm convinced that that Laois team that I played on wouldn't get destroyed by Dublin like that. We had too good a team. Our forwards were too good, our midfield. Laois are nowhere near that team now and are getting destroyed by Dublin. Have all the other teams fallen back to the point, like the Meath team now is nowhere near the Meath team Keane played on, or again, not even in the same planet as the 90s teams. there's an argument Dublin have gotten better and have massive unfair advantages, but there's also the argument that the other teams in Leinster have gone back. I don't know why.
Yeah, but like that's it's almost it's a perfect storm. Like I don't want to play any of it down at all, because it's mad, and it's not a level playing field. You can't say it's not. Like, you can get into reasons about the GA funding and whether you agree with that or not, but like, it's the byproduct is this senior machine, the senior football machine, and it's happened at a time like, so you have Dublin, who are probably, yeah, they are the best team that we've seen, and you have a Leinster, like, where there's only four other teams in the top 16 in the league, none of them in the top 8 in the league anymore. Like, you have four Division 2 teams, and then the rest are Division 3 and 4 teams. So that's come down to like a provincial thing as well, because somebody drew a line about 1,000 years ago around these 12 counties, and now they are fated to play against Dublin every single year when what, 8 out of 12 of them aren't even in Division 2. Like, so like that makes it worse. It definitely, every year when we have to see them playing Wicklow and Longford and the like every single year. And again, you're right as well when you say like that there's an idea there that we need a strong Dublin. Like, I do agree with that because of what you said about the schools. Like, you don't want to lose to soccer or to rugby. And like, Dublin, again, this is a separate question when you come back down to a senior football championship, but Dublin is where a quarter of the island is living, like, you know, and that's including all the counties in the north. So you do need to invest in there, and then you do obviously then probably need to ask a separate question regarding what's happening because of that investment. Like, the first priority is to make sure all these people are playing GAA, but then Jesus, when they're as engaged as they are now, then it's obviously a runaway freight train.
Yeah, no, like, I mean, that's the thing, Keane. Like, when you look at Billy Sheehan, for example, who played with Leash, he's a Kerry player. He's living in and working in Dublin now. He's three sons, you know, and like, I mean, they're all going to play for Dublin. You know, like, I mean, Dublin have all the population. They have everybody moving there because of work, you know, and they have all this funding from the government. They have all this sponsorship money. They have the structures in place. It's just a machine. Like, the numbers the likes of Kilmacook Crofts can have at, you know, the under 10, under 12 levels. It's a numbers game, Keane, and it's a structures game. And now that Dublin have everything working in their favour, you know, it's completely unfair. Is there an argument that the GAA stops giving them games development money and says, with the sponsorship money that you're able to generate, you need to be self-sufficient here, you know? Or is that unfair on Dublin, or is the answer to split Dublin?
Listen, I don't actually know. My view on it is that if you look at Dublin clubs have bigger picks than most counties, so to my mind there shouldn't even be a Dublin inter-county team. If you're talking about making it an equitable system, then the Dublin clubs have as big a pick as counties. So, I mean, they have the exact same resources and beyond. I mean, it's very hard to try and put your finger on, because the whole parish system, by its very nature, is not set up with a modern day sporting organization in mind, where you have an equitable playing field. You know, if you go through each county and look at the roll of honour for the top, you know, who's top of the roll of honour. I look at Meath, Navan O'Mahony's by a mile from Navan. Port Leash, I'm sure, by a long way. But, you know, you go down to Kerry, I'm sure it's the Killarney clubs or Tralee. You know, big urban areas in every county almost always are the ones with the big roll of honour for winning the most titles. Dublin are just the town team of the inter-county setup, and everybody else is a rural country team with limited resources, significantly lower pay.
Yeah, but the difference,
and an inability to compete consistently over the years.
The difference there is that the Leash County Board don't pump Port Leash full of completely, you know, more games development money than all the other clubs. Like, I mean,
that's the point, Wally. I mean, this, if you go back to 2003, it was a fucking stupid idea. It was an absolutely ridiculous idea. I mean, the sport is there. People play sport for a variety of reasons. Firing a load of games development officers into schools, does that make kids play? Yeah, maybe. But what about the knock-on effects? What about the fact that in 31 other counties, nobody else, people are completely disillusioned by it and don't want to play anymore? So does that mean we're going to have just GAA being played in the city of Dublin? Like, I mean, that's ludicrous to begin with. So, I mean, somebody needs to have a serious look at it and say, well, what do we want? Like, what do we actually want here from this game? I mean, at this stage, I would actually advocate that if you want to have an equitable system, do away with county entirely and just play club championship. Because if you think about it, in every individual county, then you have some level of play platforms. You get divisional teams joined up together. Maybe you have that. Maybe that's what you do. Maybe Division 3 and 4 teams are combined or certain things like that. But nobody will have the appetite to support that. That's the difficulty. When you have a big change like this, it's how do you get public buy-in? How do you get player buy-in? And it's a very, very difficult situation to be in. And it's a terrible, terrible situation for the sport, actually. It's a dreadful situation for the sport to be in. Because if this cycle continues, and there's absolutely no evidence to suggest that this isn't going to continue for multiple years going forward, if the current format is retained, I don't see where the game goes. Like, I see it and think of the next generation of kids coming up in different counties. I mean, what is the incentive? Okay, people love the sport, but the reason people love the sport is that you can compete. Nobody wants to go out and be hammered out the gate. Nobody wants to go out and have no chance of success or no chance of getting any satisfaction thing from their sport. I mean, that's just unfair. The duty of any organization is to create a competition where all of the stakeholders have a meaningful involvement in it and have a meaningful chance of success, or certainly of being able to compete. I mean, the level of victory that Dublin are putting on teams is just totally wrong fundamentally. Now, look, I have no solution to it, and I'm sure that there's plenty of committees that can go and look at these things, but they need to have a serious, serious look at what they're going to do about it, because all that's happening is it's a cycle that keeps rolling on. Are the teams in Leinster getting worse? Of course they're getting worse, because I'm sure there are loads of players in all of these counties who are looking at it saying, well, I have absolutely no chance of success, but maybe I'll give it a year or two. And they play for a year or two and then they're gone. But we all know that it takes multiple years to develop, you know, that the right structure within a team, the right group within a team, and to build a squad. Like, if you're trying to compete with Dublin, that takes years to build your depth talent within your squad to be able to compete with the depth of talent Dublin have. And you look at players, top players from counties like Daniel Flynn, for example, from Clare, taking a year out and all of these things. And it's happened in Meath as well. Our top players maybe stepping away for a year or two. I mean, that kills the whole thing. Because the other counties don't have the resources. I mean, Jack McCaffrey is almost a once-in-a-generation player. And he steps away and Dublin win the All-Ireland. He's a once-in-a-generation player everywhere else, but not in Dublin. You know, that kind of thing. So it's desperately sad to see, like, from a personal perspective, from my own county, it was desperately sad to see such a margin of defeat again, when you consider that, like, that group of players have done the county proud with their efforts and their commitment and their hunger and their appetite and their application in so many games. And then you see them just going out like that against Dublin. And to be honest with you, nobody really wants to see that. Now, I don't have the answer to it. But, I mean, the attitude of, oh, it's up to everyone else to just get up to Dublin's level. Well, I'm sorry, but that needs support from central level. It can't just be left to counties themselves, because I look at those Meath players. They could not be trying any harder. They could not be giving more of a time commitment to it. And that goes for multiple years of that particular group. So, yeah, you can say a team isn't good enough, and that's fine. But that margin of defeat is not a team not being good enough. At club level, you can pick the worst team in the county against the top club team, and you'd really struggle to get that margin of defeat.
Yeah, no, exactly. Listen, we might talk about that a little bit more on Thursday, but we're out of time now. The one thing I would say is that, like, I mean, if the structure of the championship has changed and the Leinster Championship goes before a league-style All-Ireland, it won't be highlighted until Dublin start winning the league, you know, by huge, huge amounts. And that could probably happen as well, you know, in the high-profile championship matches. But anyways, lads, we'll leave it there. We'll be back on Thursday. Like I said, we'll get some reaction from Cavan and from Tipperary, and we'll talk maybe a little bit more about this as well. So we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.